Tracy Swedlow, editor-in-chief of Interactive TV Today and the co-producer of the TV of Tomorrow show.
And this is Colin Dixon, founder and chief analyst of Endscreen Media. And this is
Tea Time. We're all about tech, news, television, trouble, tomorrow.
And tea, although we don't have any tea today, I think.
I'll tell you what I'm drinking, though. I'm drinking sparkling water out of a ComScore glass that we distribute at our conferences from time to time. Thank you, ComScore.
Very nice. Very nice. I'm just sticking with my coffee. It's still morning, so I'll switch to tea this afternoon. But we have a really interesting discussion today. I have been in London, and I was at a conference called Videoscape, put on by Mediatel in London, actually at BAFTA, Tracy. I was at BAFTA. It was absolutely wonderful, wonderful, wonderful theatre.
Yeah.
And it was a very, very appropriate place to be doing this because there was a whole bunch of people from the television industry at this conference. And I managed to snag a gentleman named John Amar, who is COO of a new service called Marquee TV. And this new service is really, really kind of cool. Actually, what I'm going to do, I'm going to play a clip of my conversation with John, and he's going to tell us all about Marquee TV, what the idea is behind it. So here's the clip.
We've seen a major change, a major development in the way that culture content is consumed, probably over the last decade. It started with Metropolitan Opera Live. Over here in the UK, we've had seen National Theatre Live and Royal Opera House Live. You've seen big screens in sort of Trafalgar Square. You've seen Simon Rattle play with the LSO in Trafalgar Square. So there's this huge demand for culture content. And what you haven't had is an app that allowed fans and super fans to really access it when they want, how they want.
So that's what Marquee TV is. It's there to really service the arts community and the fine arts community, Tracy. And I know there are a couple of other services out there, like Broadway
HD.
Broadway mm-hmm. HD.
Yeah.
This is not, but I wouldn't exactly call this a crowded space, would you?
It's not as crowded as sort of the general, you know, TV content aggregator space, but there are some interesting new competitors. A week or two ago, we interviewed the CEO of the Stage Network, which just launched this month in October, Rich Affinato. There's also Shakespeare TV Digital Theater, which also comes from the UK, and that's with an RE at the end. There's another service called Scenarium that I found. Of course, Ovation has always been around for a long time, right, as a linear network.
Right.
YouTube has quite a lot of digital theater offerings, Shakespeare TV offerings. I mean, it's out there, but it's definitely more difficult to find. And, of course, these services haven't really had the marketing budget, you know, that, you know, the big, you know, titles have. So we'll see. I think this is very exciting. And I obviously I wouldn't be surprised. Maybe you could tell me that the English tax system, I don't know who disperses funds, but is the English sort of tax in a service dispensing funds to Marquee TV as a kind of a, you know, good for the English public, good for the British public?
I
don't know what
is,
the entity is that does
there is
this.
An arts organization, mm-hmm. sort of the, I guess, the equivalent of the NEA.
Yeah.
I think there is an equivalent in the UK as well. Although, to be honest, I can't bring it to mind. But you know, the interesting thing is, and it sounds like there's quite a few services that are really going after this niche. But it turns out, Tracy, it's a pretty big niche. So I actually
British
asked,
Council. It's called the British Council.
Oh, that's right. That's right. So I actually asked John about this, and here's what he had to say about this particular niche.
We see it as a, you know, fundamental global niche. We've always said that, you know, Hollywood is a £30 billion kind of global business, but performing arts is about the same size. It's actually a slightly larger industry. And while there's access to some of that content on free-to-air broadcasters on some pay TV, there's been no dedicated service for culture.
So I guess that isn't quite true, because as we say, we just discussed a bunch of services. But you know, $30 billion as a global market—that's a pretty big market to go at. And that, you know, the great thing is with online delivery and direct to consumer services like this, it's you can actually reach people who are in that niche. And I think that's why we haven't seen anything in traditional sort of broadcast media that really focuses on this group with this type of service, right?
Well, it's a subset, right? It's people who have traditionally gone to a physical location to see something which is ephemeral. So and people who go to see dance and opera often are older, you know, to be honest. So it's definitely a subset. Whether or not these services can attract the foot traffic back into their living room to watch this kind of content remains to be seen. I, of course, am a huge fan of this kind of content, having studied theater and for many years. So I'm in favor of it. If they can not only deliver a high quality service and inspire younger people, to get involved in these art forms, fantastic. But the key question I have is, what are they going to do differently? If they're just going to aggregate Shakespeare, okay, fine, I'll watch it. But how are they going to hook in those young kids who all want to watch YouTube short, you know, attention span programming and all the YouTube stars? How are you going to attract a large enough audience who has money to spend? You've got to do something that creates a live moment. You have to do something that creates news. You have to do perhaps performance art, like, you know, Banksy just did at Sotheby's. You have to do something that where live theater is entertainment, and you want to not be a FOMO, right? Fear of moving out, fear of missing out. So you've got to find a way to really jazz up these services. I think unless you have the marketing muscle to reach into the older audiences that have this money to spend.
Yeah. And it sounds like one of the things that John talked about, he talked a lot about the growing movement of free arts being delivered in public spaces. And I think that he sees that as a big opportunity, because those things are usually heavily promoted in the areas that they're happening. But when you think about it, you know, making those a happening place and leveraging that to sort of boost the service could be really interesting. Now, one of the things I didn't ask him, which I wished I had now, and maybe I can follow up with him and we can chat about it on another tea time. But I didn't ask him if he was actually looking to partner with those events and those the organizations that are putting them on, because I think that could be really interesting. Now, of course, that happens a lot, right? Because you've got simulcasts going on in cinema theaters. But I'm really thinking about the things that happen in truly public spaces where people can go watch for free. That's the sort of thing that young people are likely to attend. And where I think this a service like this could really help connect people together and help grow the service itself. So
I mean, I think that's a great idea. I mean, if he had a newsletter or a publication that reached out and said, hey, this content's coming up, this live event is happening in Trafalgar Square, buy your viewing ticket or subscribe to this service, I might really be interested in watching something that might be live, or at least something I can't access here in the States, right? That's happening in London. If I knew that there was a real scene going on in London in the theater, district and some of the offbeat places, and they were intrepid enough to go report on some of the incredible exploratory experimental things that are going on, I'd pay for that. But maybe I'm a niche audience. However, I'm kind of curious. Did you ask him whether or not A, they're funded, B, they are going to be selling tickets, are they doing any kind of commerce? So those are two questions. One, are they well funded? I guess two, do they have rev shares with organizations like the RSC, Royal Shakespeare Company? And three, are they going to get into the business of selling tickets?
So the answer to the first question about funded is yes, they are funded. He was a little reluctant to tell me where the funding came from. But yes, they are funded. That's the first thing. The second thing is that he's in active discussions with a lot of the arts organizations. And one of the problems that he's finding is that the thinking in the digital space is just not very well developed. They're still thinking old world. They're not realizing the value, the true value of the assets that they have flowing through their theaters and mm-hmm. what have you. Mm-hmm. And so in a way, what he's doing, he's educating the folks inside the industry of what's really achievable here. So that's something I think that's a barrier, both a barrier and an opportunity, because that what that means is there's a whole load of stuff out there, Tracy, that really isn't being leveraged yet in the digital sphere in this way. So I think there's lots of opportunity there for him to actually help develop the market.
Did he say he's going to do original programming?
He did not. He never said original programming. I would say that's something that would probably evolve over time. So as they become more successful, that they will start to move in. I mean, very much in the way that you know what's happening with Crunchyroll and with Elation. Crunchyroll has established more than 1 million subscribers now, and it's been in market for at least 5 years, and they've only just begun to create truly original stuff. They formed Elation Studios, and they're producing their first anime from Elation Studios, which is slated for release early next year. So I think this is probably something that's evolutionary and that they'll get to in the future. But certainly we didn't talk about that. So actually, I want to hear a little bit more from John, Tracy. He talked about super serving the audience. And I asked him what he meant by super serving. And here's what he had to say.
Well, I think the way to look at it is, you know, if you're a member of, say, I don't know, the Royal Shakespeare Company, you might get to see a couple of performances a year. If you're a member, you probably get, you know, programmed from each show. What you don't get is a chance to see, you know, all 36 performances of all of Shakespeare's plays that they've just completed. What Marquee allows you to do is watch them at your convenience, you know, in a very kind of cost-effective way.
So I really love this idea of tapping into the folks that are already subscribing and allowing them to extend the relationship with their passion outside of just the theater. And this is something that I've heard many times with other services. So I'm thinking of ConTV from Cinedigm, where they're really focused on the cosplay and sci-fi audiences, that sort of thing, mm-hmm. in the conferences, there are several other services like that too. So I think there's a lot to this. You know, these people are already paying a subscription, and the amount of money, I think they were talking about like $10 a month or something like that for this service. It's not a significant enough amount of money for somebody that's already invested. Oh gosh, must be, you know, hundreds of pounds to be a member of one of these bigger arts series, right?
I believe. I believe that because people are so spread and that. You know, will they sign up for one more service? I don't know. Again, it's a niche market that they're trying to go after. So Marquee TV, what I understand, is selling it for $8.99 a month, or $89.99, unless that's pounds. I forgot to write down pounds or dollars. And similarly, these other services are about the same. So I think they've all sort of looked at what each other's doing. It seems to all be around just under $10 or just under $100 for the whole year.
At that price point, I think it's pretty reasonable for somebody that's targeting in that target market. But actually,
let me interrupt you for a second.
Yeah, go.
Do you know? Thank you. But do you know if he say that he is, like you said, partnering with these other organizations like the Barbican, the RSC, or any of the theaters? You know, in London, perhaps, or the regional theaters to market this service? Will they be able to sell subscriptions in the theater when you walk in the door to be able to see perhaps the performance you just saw or to see other performances that that theater is showing down the road. I mean, that is where the money would be, I would
think.
Yeah,
yeah. And that's exactly what ConTV is doing, right? ConTV is actually working with the conference organizers to make sure that there's plenty of opportunities for people to be exposed to ConTV at those events with discounts and you know, what? And in fact, they're even going further. ConTV is even going further in that ConTV members can get preferential entrance into some of the panel sessions that take place at these events. So there's an actual extra incentive. So that sort of partnership here, I think, would work extremely well. And now I think about it, there's another, you may have heard of Curzon Cinemas in the UK. Curzon actually brings art house films to their cinemas. It's an art house organization. They recently started Curzon at Home, which is their at-home service. And there, I think there's synergies between Curzon Cinemas and Curzon at Home, which gives, I think, discounts to members in the movie houses. So I love this idea of tying together something with a physical presence, like a conference or a theater, with a digital service, and actually, you know, allowing the physical enjoyment of whatever that is that you're watching to be extended into the digital sphere so you can expand that relationship. So I neglected to ask him that question, but hopefully it is something that he's looking to do with those organizations.
It'd be kind of fun to do a game or something so that the more performances you attend or the more programs that you watch on marquee TV somehow apply back into the physical house, you know, into the theater and back and forth, sort of like a coupon or like a rewards program or something like that. I think that would be useful. Like when you accumulate something to maybe you could appear on stage or go to special parties. I mean, we're giving him ideas right now. I'm just thinking out loud about how you could make this work.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure they've been brainstorming a lot of this stuff as well, Tracy. So so hopefully maybe we can actually get him on live next time and chat a little bit more about the service. I want to get on to another thing. We talked about one of the core audiences for him, which is people that are already members of an arts organization and already subscribing to a season or something like that. So that's just one of the audience segments that he's going after. So let's listen to the other audience segments that he's going after.
We always say that we have sort of three key audiences. So we talk about the devotees, and those are people who are regular attendees of cultural events. They're probably actually beyond that. They're probably a member of something. Also, we see there's an audience of what we call almost FOMOs, fear of missing out. It's classically, you know, they've got a partner, they've got a family. Frankly, you know, it's a struggle to get to the cinema anymore. But they probably went to art galleries or went to the theatre in the past. Now, they've probably got a smart TV at home. They're used to using services like Netflix and Amazon Prime. We're offering them the chance to, you know, enjoy the best of culture when they can. And then finally, it's about bringing new audiences to culture. So people talk about, you know, Generation Z, you know, millennials. They're seeking experiences, whether that be kind of a rooftop cinema or pop-up restaurants. We're going to make culture an experience that they can enjoy on their terms, on platforms they're comfortable with.
So that's the last group is the group that I think is the most contentious, right? Can he bring in new audiences to this type of content? And that actually goes back to what you were saying earlier, Tracy, right? Which is, how do you engage younger people? And perhaps the way you do that is by partnering with events providers and other stuff like that, right?
I think also, to some extent, they may need to be a little journalistic. They need to have somebody go and report, you know, on what's going on, shoot some video, do some original, you know, investigation into why something exciting is happening in some little theater, and create some buzz. Because when you bring in the new viewers and the community around the entity that was showing that content into your platform, that's going to create virality, right? So to some extent, you have to help along the emerging theater community or drama, I mean, or opera community, whatever that whatever is happening with the youth, you've got to go out and make it attractive to them, and that they need to be able to check in to see what their peers are doing, what their competitors are doing. I think that's the key.
Yeah, I do too.
I would love to know what's going on in regional theaters in small places all over the United States or in London. I'd love all that, but I need someone to physically go there and shoot it and make it palatable, you know? And then along the way, I'll watch, you know, the latest version of Macbeth or something that's being done in the style of, like on a ship or something, you know, some new concept piece. But, you know, I need to be brought in with something new.
So, you know, one of the most encouraging things I see when I attend live events, Tracy, and you probably do the same, I'm always so impressed that I see young people coming to traditional, you know, classic arts performances where you see opera in the park and you see theater and you see the symphony. I'm always amazed that there are so many young people. So they seem to be finding out about these. But the odd thing is when I go to events at theaters, I don't see them. So they're not being drawn in and they're not being engaged. And I wonder if that's something that a service like Marquee TV can help with. If they do it right, they can help draw those younger people back in. And that's clearly one of the things, one of the key things that John wants to do.
Well, you know, it could all be about fashion. People like to wear.
Well, it comes to, in some respects, these the new audiences that he wants to attract, their FOMO as well, their fear of missing out, because they're seeing these great great outdoor, you know, and live happenings that mm-hmm. are free, and they want to be in on that. They want to see what's going on, and so they come and check it out. So,
if I were him, I would also go and cover all those lifestyle conferences, you know, like Coachella and.
Oh my, yeah.
You know, I mean, there's a million of these things.
New culture, yeah.
But, you know, there's a lot of culture. Depends how you define culture. I mean, that's the thing. Is he talking only high, what's considered classical high culture? Or, I mean, is he interested in pop culture, down dirty culture, stuff that's like, you know, in private art houses somewhere deep in the belly of San Francisco where they do, you know, experimental things. So yeah. I don't know. It depends what they mean by culture.
Well, I suspect that, you know, he's probably, I think he's probably looking, I mean, from what he says, it sounds like the service is not really focused on that. It's really focused on what I guess we would call high art, classic art, things.
Well, that's what I'm saying, is he's slimming his niche audience even further. So I'm in favor of all those things, sure. But in order to feed the monster, to keep it growing, to drive new audiences, I am suggesting, hopefully nicely and humbly, to, you know, look beyond much ado about nothing sometimes.
Yeah, I don't know. That sounds like it could be a different service to me. Because I'm not sure how much of a crossover there will be between the two.
How about Much Ado About Nothing in space?
That would be an interesting thing.
That's literally for sure. On the space station. You know.
Well, I tell you what, Daisy, let's play one more clip from John. And then we'll call it a day. I asked him about competition. So what is he, what's his competition? What's he girding his loins to deal with going forward? And here's what he had to say.
Mm-hmm. I always say we're competing against everything. You know, people have limited time. As I said in the panel earlier, you know, 24 hours in a day, 8 hours of work, 8 hours of sleep, you know, a couple of hours of a commute. You know, whether it be meeting up with your friends or having dinner, people have a lot of time. I think as a video on demand service, you know, what we offer is that absolute choice, which is, you know, do you want to watch something on your commute? Do you want to watch something at home? How do you want to sort of make time to enjoy culture on your terms? I think that's the key. It's putting the consumer in charge.
I cut off the air then, but the end of what he said there, but it's putting the consumer in charge, I think, is what he was saying. You know, I think that there's something to what he's saying. I mean, the truth is that a service like this, consumers have not been able to get at this if they'd wanted to get at it. It's not really been available to them in the past. So they're filling their time with something else. So he recognizes that what he has to do in some respects is he has to compete with that. He has to be able to deliver something that's going to take back that time that could have been devoted to watching the arts and in other words, he has to displace something else. And that's a pretty tall order, isn't it?
Definitely. I think there are all kinds of studies out there trying to determine how many of these OTT services you're going to be willing to pay for. I mean, how many are you paying for? Or are you getting for free as a journalist, you know?
Well, I mean, some of them I do get for free. I am sort of on a press junket for, but many of them I do not. So I can tell you that I pay for Curiosity Stream. I pay for Netflix, Amazon, Hulu. Which other ones do I have? Oh gosh, I pay for YouTube TV. I probably am paying for about 10 different services at the moment. Now, some of that is,
but you're in the biz, so you have
slightly to. Because I'm in the biz. But mm-hmm. I can tell you that the ones I wouldn't be without are things like Curiosity Stream, BritBox, and some of the smaller services that really tickle my particular fancy. Those are the ones that I am paying for them. But even if I was being given them for free and that was taken away from me, I'd start paying for them because they're important enough to me. And I think John, obviously Marquee TV needs to be one of those services. And I actually asked him about size of audience that he would need to be successful. I think he recognizes that actually Marquee TV can be pretty successful without having to generate an audience of 10 million. It can probably do pretty well at an audience level of 1 million, like Crunchyroll. And I got to believe that this market is capable of delivering an audience of that size, wouldn't you say?
Well, I think it's a great question to think about, but I'm curious how many platforms he's delivering on right now. From what I can tell, it's Apple TV, Amazon Fire TV, you can access it over your phones, you know, Android and iOS. But what about, you know, all the other available platforms out there?
Right. And this is the classic.
Did he say he's expanding or?
Oh, absolutely. But this is the classic problem, right? This is the classic problem for smaller services.
Yeah, it's like very, MVPD partnerships, you know?
It's very expensive to be on all of the platforms. And so what they tend to do is they tend to launch on a limited number of platforms to start and expand beyond that. So for example, when Broadway HD expanded, you actually couldn't get on the TV in any other way except by doing casting to another device. So they did support casting onto the television, but I gotta tell you, the quality was lousy. So there's nothing like having an app on a particular device for delivering a great experience, but it is expensive to do all of those apps. And so I imagine that he'll, like everybody else, he'll be sitting there expanding on the platforms that his customers say, hey, we need this. Give us one for Roku. Give us one for Apple TV, if that's what a lot of them are using, you know?
I'll be curious to see if he partners with some of the MVPD offerings that are, you know, aggregating stuff as well.
Yeah, that'd be interesting too. Of course, the ones that select an open platform, like say an Android TV or Roku, Roku's pretty open, and there are plenty of TVs out there with that on it too. Then, you know, there's a short circuit way of getting onto quite a lot of TVs quite quickly. So perhaps that's something.
They don't list Roku on here.
No, I was surprised that they don't do Roku, but it is an English service. I know it is available here in the States, but it is an English oriented service, and Roku isn't released standalone in the UK yet, or at least I don't think it was. It's not very big. It is available, ironically, but it's available as a white label product from Sky called the Now TV box. But I would think that they could probably get on that if they wanted to, and there are quite a lot of Now TV boxes out there, that's for sure.
Well, I hope that it succeeds, because I certainly love this kind of content.
Me too.
You know, I think that the world needs more Shakespeare and theater, and so all power to them.
Yeah, me too. And I'm definitely going to give the service a try. I love the idea. You know, every now and again, I just get this desire, this passion to watch some Shakespeare. There's still quite a few Shakespeare plays I haven't seen and would really love to. So this would maybe be a great way of doing that. So I'm really excited to see the service. But I think, you know what, Tracy? I think we're just about out of time. We've been yakking for long enough, I think.
By the way, if you are interested in Shakespeare, there's Stratford Festival up in Canada is doing some incredible work, and it'd be great to see if Marquee TV reaches out to them.
That's a good idea.
Their Coriolanus, I believe, is spectacular, from what I understand.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. And by the way, I'll be posting the full interview with video. It's on video. So if you want to see John in the flesh, you can come to my site. I'll probably post it next week. And Tracy, if you want to cross post on your site with the full interview, that'd be cool too.
Okay, sounds great.
Very good.
Thank you so much from both of us, or myself and
Colin. Thank you. Loved the discussion.
This is Tea Time. We love to talk about TV and tech, and we hope to see you very soon. Now make sure you go to Colin's website at nscreenmedia.com. And of course, ITVT is itvt.com. And you can find about our conference coming up in New York, December 6th, the TV of Tomorrow show at tvotshow.com.
And
Colin will be there. Thanks.
I'll be there, and we'll be talking to lots of interesting folks. So thanks for listening.